Today is Monday, October 12th, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Marcia Clark, spelled C-L-A-R-K. My name is Tom Martin. Good evening, Marcia. How are you today?
I'm just fine, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Marcia, may we have your permission to record this interview over the telephone?
Yes, you do.
Well, thank you very much. Marcia, what year were you born?
I was born May 4th, 1928.
Okay. And where were you born?
I was born in Manila, Philippines.
What were your parents doing in Manila?
Well, my father was a businessman.
Okay.
And he was involved with some coconut business, you know, making... you know, the kind of coconut we buy in packages today, desiccated coconut.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So was he running coconut?
He was treasurer of the firm.
Okay. And how did your dad meet your mom?
Excuse me?
How did your mother meet your father?
My dad was a New Yorker, and his father died when he was about 14, and so he quit high school to earn some money to help his mother raise his two siblings.
Okay.
And I think he got a job first in a jewelry store, and that wasn't enough money, so he caddied on a golf course on Sundays.
Okay.
And that's where he met people that were influential in his life.
Wow.
So, after a while, he was, he got involved with the, my mind is not, let me think.
So he was caddying on the golf course, and the question is, how did he meet your mom?
Mm-hmm. He met my mother in Hawaii.
Wow.
Because he was offered a job on the U.S. Shipping Board, and he was eventually sent to Hawaii, and my mother was over there teaching school.
What's the U.S. Shipping Board?
Excuse me?
What's the U.S. Shipping Board? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, that was a long time ago. I don't know what it was.
Okay. Wow, but so he did really well for himself. Did he go to college?
Mm-hmm. And so they met, and they were married in Honolulu.
Okay.
And on their honeymoon, they took a trip to the Philippines, stopping in Shanghai, China, and also... Japan, let me think, what was it?
What was your mom doing in Honolulu? Was she from Hawaii?
No, she was raised in Southern California.
Okay.
Called National City. And then she finished high school and went to San Diego State Teachers College at the time, which is now San Diego State University.
Okay.
And then when she graduated, she and her best friend, whose name was Marcia, and that's who I was named
for. Oh, that's neat.
And they went to Oakland, where they got teaching jobs.
Okay.
And then she heard about this opportunity to teach in Hawaii on Maui.
Wow.
And so she accepted and went over by ship to Maui, and when she arrived, the school board greeted her and advised her that she would have certain decorum that she was going to have to follow on. One was to not to drink or smoke.
Yeah.
Another one was to not stay out late at night. And another one was to go to church on Sunday.
Wow, okay.
Well, her family were not churchgoers, but the family that they had her live with were.
Okay.
And so they would take her to church with them, and that's where she, and she loved it. She really did.
Oh, nice.
And so she became confirmed in the Episcopal Church there. And let's see, after she and my dad were married, they went to the Philippines on their honeymoon.
So, Marcia, can I back up a little bit? How much time did your mother and father get a chance to get to know each other before they got married?
A little while. I'm not sure how long that was.
Okay. Well, that's neat.
And Yokohama and Japan, they stopped there and did some shopping.
Okay.
And also in China.
Wow.
And then ended up in Manila. So my dad was, first of all, interested in a business called EJ&L Company. It was an importing-exporting business. And then he heard about coconuts.
Okay.
And so he decided to work for this coconut firm. And he did for years until World War II. Well, even after World War II.
Wow. So did he go to college?
He never did. He just went 2 years to high school, and then he went to work to help support his family.
And he ended up being the treasurer of a firm. Then he was good with numbers. Wow.
He was a very, very bright man.
Wow.
And he also was a very good golfer.
Okay.
And he met a lot of influential people. So he he was Philippine Open champion 2 years in a row. And some of the trips that he made were in Hong Kong, I guess for golfing. And my mother would go along. She didn't like golf, but she went to shop.
Okay. What year did they get married, do you know?
Let me think. I think it was probably 21.
Okay. So do you have older brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister who is 5 years older than I am.
Okay.
And my brother was 3 years younger.
Okay.
And we were all three born in Manila.
Okay.
And we lived a very, very nice life there. You know, we were pretty spoiled.
Okay.
And I had a Filipino ama that practically raised me.
Wow.
And next to my mother, I loved her best.
Oh.
So she was with me till I was a good 10 years old.
Okay. Yeah, 1938, 1940, when is the war and hostilities going to start really impacting?
Yes, your... but before that, I went to a school called the American School.
Okay.
And it was segregated, I'm sorry to say, but
okay.
It was for American children, number one. And you had to have white skin and afford the tuition. So it was a good, as far as I was concerned, it was a very good school system.
Okay.
And I had gone through that school system till I was in the eighth grade.
Okay.
When Pearl Harbor happened. And I had gone to school because of the time change. Pearl Harbor in the Philippines occurred on a Monday instead of Sunday as we think of it.
Oh, interesting.
So I was at my desk working away, and my mother arrived, and she came up to my desk and said, "You gather up all your books and everything in your desk, and we're going home." And I thought, well, what the heck's going on?
Mm.
But I did, and my sister and brother were already in the car. And away we went to our house, which isn't always the safest place. And my father, his office was downtown Manila, and he had a hard time getting home because after Pearl Harbor, then the Philippines were bombed.
Oh, wow.
And we had our first air raid that same day.
Okay.
And it was very frightening because we, you know, there was a feeling of war about to happen, but we never really believed it would.
Interesting, okay.
And I always said, well, Corregidor is so highly fortified that the Japanese could never get that close to Manila. Well, they didn't land on Corregidor. They went to southern Luzon and then worked their way up to Manila. And so we knew they were coming. And my father, we had a radio. That was the only communication we had because the newspaper shut down immediately. And we were told that we would have to have a suitcase for each person packed with clothes for just 3 days. And my mother packed not only the suitcases for everyone, there were five of us, but she also put some canned corned beef and some canned malted milk, and I can't remember what else, and her knitting needles. She knitted a lot
okay.
for the British War Relief at that time.
Okay.
So we were first taken to a place called Villiamor Hall. The Japanese had picked us up.
How do you spell that?
V-I-L-L, Villiamor Hall. I think that's right. And we were there for 3 days. And when we got there, we were placed on the stage, and the rest of the crowd was down in the lower part of the auditorium. So we managed on the malted milk and the corned beef, and we're glad to have it.
Mm.
We had water. There was a drinking fountain. We could always get water, but that was probably the only food that we had.
So can I just back up a minute? This is the Japanese occupation of Manila, is that right?
Right.
Okay.
We were picked up on January 3rd, 1942.
Did your father or mother speak any Japanese?
No.
Okay.
And they didn't speak any Tagalog either.
Okay. And you were 12, you were 13, how old were you?
Excuse me?
How old were you then?
I was 13.
Okay.
My sister was 15. My brother was about 10, I think he was at that time, 9 or 10.
Okay. Were you aware enough of the geopolitical scene at the time to be concerned?
Yes, I was concerned, especially when the Japanese ordered all the men to leave first, and we didn't know where they were going to be taken.
Okay.
Or if we'd ever see them again.
Wow.
So my father had to leave, and with the rest of the men, and the women and children were left behind. And then we were taken to Santo Tomas University. And my father and the rest of the men were already there, so it was a huge relief to see them there.
I bet.
We were there for 3 years and 1 month. Well, I forgot to mention, among my dad's golf partners was General MacArthur.
My.
And also Eisenhower, who was on MacArthur's staff at the time.
Wow.
And he was, as I say, was quite a renowned golfer.
Okay.
So, and he belonged to several golf clubs around the Philippines.
Okay.
Let me think, what else? So we got into Santo Tomas, and it was a university campus.
Okay.
And the main building was where they wanted all women and young girls to be. And the men were taken to what they called the education building. And we were assigned rooms to sleep in. Well, they had to give us some mosquito netting because mosquitoes are always bad over there, you know, in the tropics.
Mm.
And my father, I don't know how he managed to do this, but he arranged for some wooden beds to be made into beds for us all. And our cook, who had been our cook since before I was born, and who was very loyal and wonderful to our family throughout the war, and he arranged for some mattresses from the house to be brought in. And then for the first year we were there, he was very, very good at taking, bringing us food.
Wow.
And so we really didn't suffer that much, except for the fact that we couldn't leave. Everybody who was in there was assigned a job. We had a central committee, mostly of American men, and they were wonderful with how they planned this whole thing. You know, men who had been high up in the banking industry or whatever you call it would be carrying garbage cans down to the main floor, and it was a three-story building that my mother and sister and I were in. My brother and my dad were in the education building. So we, like I say, the first year was not that rough because David was able to bring us food. And he was very loyal to us.
What was his name?
Well, it's spelled D-A-V-I-D, but we pronounced it David. I guess that's a Filipino pronunciation of it.
Okay. Thank you.
And he also would, if we needed any medication or anything, he would manage to get it. And for a while, he even took our clothes out and had them laundered.
Wow.
And brought back.
Wow.
And then he went back to our house, and he brought more clothes to us. One of the things my father did when we knew the Japanese were coming, he arranged for a Swiss family to move into our home.
Okay.
And our home was not damaged during the war, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And then I think he also transferred funds into a Swiss bank.
Okay.
And David was, you know, he was so trustworthy. And I think he was able to get money out of the bank and get it to us in the camp, because it was always handy to have money there.
Okay.
And he was wondering, well, what could we spend money on? Well, people were pretty industrious, and they started little businesses, like a candy store or bread baking store and so on and so forth. And this grew around the camp. And so if you had some money, then you could help with your food distribution.
Did everybody kind of take care of everybody else? I mean, it sounds like...
A lot of it happened that way.
Okay.
And we were not just Americans in there. There were a lot of British
civilians. Okay.
And then there were Dutch, and there were Russian, and they were French. And they were from Holland as well. So we were all, you know... on the good side of the war, you could call it.
Yeah. I was thinking too about the people that weren't anywhere near as prepared as your family was, as your father and mother had the foresight to kind of do a little pre-planning.
Yes.
You know, they must have had it. They must have found it much more difficult.
I don't know how they planned like they did, but my dad said as soon as we were interned, then this Swiss family moved into our house, and they were neutral, you know.
Okay.
And they had to fly a Swiss flag over the roof of the house.
Ah, okay.
And the flag was seen by the Japanese planes coming in.
Okay.
And so we were not bombed like most places were.
Wow. Okay.
The first year wasn't bad at all as far as the kids were. If you were over 18, then you had a job.
Okay.
And if you were under that, you went to school.
Okay.
Because school teachers were also interned.
All right.
And everybody had to have a job, adults.
Okay.
And my father had the job of arranging for packages that the Filipinos would bring into the campus, and then he would help to carry those packages to another area. In other words, tables were set up, and then people would come and claim them. And that was one of the things that he did, and caused him to have a double hernia lifting all that.
Oh, my gosh.
So he had to have surgery while we were interned without the benefit of anesthesia.
Whoa. By one of the doctors that was also interned there?
Well, there were doctors interned there, sure. In fact,
okay.
Our regular doctor that we'd had for many years and his family were also interned. And I don't know what they did for my dad. He liked whiskey, so I'm sure they gave him a...
I'm sure they did.
That was all they had to give him.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
But wow. He survived it.
Okay.
And he was tough. So,
yeah.
Anyway, like I say, the first year wasn't that bad. The second year, things got a little tougher. And at the end of the first year, they decided no more Filipinos could come into the camp.
Ooh.
So we had to, you know, we had a garden. We had a little area where we could plant a garden. That was my brother's job mostly. And my dad worked at the front line. And my mother ran a library. People, you know, came in with books and they loaned their books out and so forth. And she was running that.
Okay.
And then my sister Helen, who was 18, she had to help serve food in the central kitchen there.
Okay. And you were going to school? What was your job? What were you doing?
Well, I was just a student.
Okay.
My brother and I, you know, we were in the eighth grade when we went in.
Mm-hmm.
And
then into the ninth grade on the second year, I guess you were four.
I was like a junior in high school when I got out.
Okay.
Does this interest you?
No. Yeah. I've never talked to anybody who's done anything like this. So, and I'm thinking it's not going to get any easier in the next year.
No. Things are getting really bad, and starvation started to really hit us on the third year. And I'm just going to jump over to the third year.
Okay.
And my birthday was May 4th, and I came down with a bad case of measles.
Mm.
And they had a makeshift hospital, you might say, and Army nurses were really heroes in the Santo Tomas.
Wow.
And they took care of a lot of sick people, and they were hungry, too. And I was taken into this hospital, and I was pretty sick. Pretty high fever, and then I broke out and started to get better. But that was one thing that I had trouble with.
But that must have been going around, you know, measles and other, I'm sure, yes. Other diseases must have been.
Well, it was amazing. They had several cases of polio, too.
Wow.
And it stopped.
Wow.
And then we also had church services in there. And Santo Tomas was a Catholic university, actually. And there was an area where the you have Catholic services. And we were Episcopalian, so we had those too.
Okay.
Let me think.
Did the
My mother
did
always
the...
told us we were going to be all right.
Okay.
So, but you know, the war got worse and worse, and we got hungrier and hungrier. And people were dying of starvation, and my father had dropped down to, let's see, it was probably 200 pounds when we went in, and by the time we were liberated, he was down to, I'm just guessing, I can't remember for sure. And then I was down to 83 pounds.
So your dad probably lost 60 or 70 pounds?
Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, by the time we were liberated, I was 16.
Wow. 16-year-old, 83 pounds.
Mm-hmm. At liberation time, I was 83 pounds.
Did the Allies bomb Manila?
Oh yes, oh yes.
And how did they did they know you were there?
They knew we were there.
Okay.
I'm sure the Filipino spies and so forth have let them know.
Okay.
And there were several American POW camps. Ours was for civilians, as well as any Allied. That's the word I was trying to think of. Allied people in the camp.
Okay.
So, have you ever heard the book? Excuse me just a second.
Yeah, no worries.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I have your message.
There you go. Thank you,
ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was my medication arriving.
Great. No worries. Good. Glad it showed up.
Let's see. Where was I?
You were talking about the third year the Allies were bombing Manila, and you were in an Allied camp of civilians, but there was no food.
Very little. My brother had a garden.
Okay.
And he raised different kinds of vegetables and tomatoes and I can't think of anything. A vegetable called Tolina. I'm sure you've never heard of that.
No.
Kind of a spinach-like vegetable, but supposedly very good for you. And we survived.
I would have assumed, though, that food was short or non-existent throughout most of Manila at the time.
Yes, all over it. All over the place. Well, on September 21st, 1944... we got our first American air raid.
Okay.
And it was wonderful to see those planes come overhead. And they knew where we were. They weren't about to bomb Santo Tomas. But they did whatever they needed to do to start winning the war.
Okay.
They finally, their first landing, I believe, was in Leyte Island. And that's where MacArthur walked through the water. You probably saw that picture.
Yeah.
He was a friend of my dad's because they'd played golf. And his chief of staff was also a very good friend of my dad's.
Was that Eisenhower?
Hmm?
You mentioned Eisenhower, or was that someone else?
He had played golf with Eisenhower and played bridge with them both.
Okay. But the chief of staff was someone else?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, let me think. There is a book out called Pandemic.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that's not the right title.
Mm.
I'll check on it for you.
Okay.
I think you would find it extremely interesting. And there is a section on there about the description of Santo Tomas.
Okay.
It is the best I have read.
Hmm. Okay.
The author is James Scott, James K. Scott.
Okay.
And I can't think of the name. Just a minute, I'll find it.
Okay.
title of the book is Rampage.
Rampage.
And it's fantastic.
Okay.
And you can order it on Amazon.
Okay.
That's what my, I have a grandson in the Marine Corps right now, and he was very interested in it.
I bet.
And a son, Tom, who lives not too far from me.
Okay. When you think back on that time now, those 3 years, 80 years ago, what are one or two of the key memories you have about that?
Well, as a child, at first I thought it was fun because I was in there with all my school friends. And parents were so worried they didn't pay much attention to us. So we had our own games we played, and we played croquet and softball and basketball even. And so it wasn't bad at all. But as I say, after the first year was over and my mother had to tell me that I was going to have to wash my own clothes, and I had no idea how to do that. So I learned because I didn't want to wear dirty clothes.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible. But if you get that book, and there's a description of Santa Tomas, it's a lot better than what I can tell you.
Well, you were there, so that's kind of why I think it's real important to get some of your recollections.
And this book is all about the liberation of the Philippines. It's not just Santa Tomas. The first part of the book is, and I think it's a book you should read.
Okay. So it sounds like at the very least you learn to be independent, you learn to take care of yourself.
Right.
And to take care of others.
Well, we all had to do our bit. And the teachers taught, and I was, and years after that when I was in Flagstaff and enrolled at Flagstaff High School, and I've had these credits from Santa Tomas with me, and they were all accepted.
Wow.
And then I took an achievement test as well, and I was placed as a senior, which is where I should have been had there not been a war. And I graduated 1946 from Flagstaff High School.
Wow.
And
okay.
And NAU.
So let's bridge that over. It was getting really tough. There was very little food. Everyone was, well, people were dying, you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And the Americans were advancing into Manila. Did the Japanese just disappear at one point? I mean, how did that...
No.
Did they just fight to the end then?
No. When you get the book and you read about Santa Tomas, it'll tell you all about that.
Okay.
And then if you have some questions after you read that,
okay,
then I'll be glad to answer any more questions about it.
That sounds fair enough.
Is this interesting to you?
It is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. And because these are the things that make people, this event would have made you who you are.
Yes.
And I don't mean to pry, I find this. These are the things about oral history that just surprise me and amaze me. These sorts of things that people have lived in. Yeah, I'm going to be very interested about your time in Flagstaff and Grand Canyon, but this event in World War II, I think, really would have helped make you who you were, so mm-hmm. who you are. Yeah.
Well,
so,
it is. You know, I think whatever happens to us as we're growing, you know, from childhood on up through adulthood and up to the grandparent stage and now the great-grandparent. It all makes you who you are.
Yeah.
My mother had a very strong faith, and she knew that we were going to be all right, and she kept telling us this. She had a great deal of faith in the good Lord looking out for us.
Nice.
And she was right.
Wow.
Because we all survived it, and not many families that went in all came out whole like we did.
Wow. Wow. So when the Allied forces came in, did you immediately go back to the house with the Swiss folks were in?
No, we didn't. Manila was in such. Well, anyway, I'll go back a bit. After we were liberated, and as I said, MacArthur came in, of course, with his chief of staff and all. And my dad was in very bad shape. He was in bed, and this chief of staff, I can't think of his name, maybe Whitney, I'm not sure. Anyway, he went to look up my dad, found him, and saw him and said to him, "George, what can I do for you?" And he said, "You can get my family out of Santo Tomas as soon as you can." Because he was afraid of a kamikaze plane coming in and landing, you know. So the army nurses were the first to leave the camp, and it was about a month before we could do this.
Okay.
And by this time, we'd gained weight and felt great, at least the kids did. I'm sure most people did, too. And so the army nurses were the first to fly out, and they were flown to the island of Leyte, which had been secured a long time ago. Well, it had been secured in September before this was in February.
Okay.
And so we were the next group, and a plane load of Santo Tomas survivors. And the plane was camouflaged, if you can imagine this, with branches.
Wow.
Palm branches around it.
Huh.
But as soon as we got up over treetops, then the branches started falling off.
Right.
And then the Japs started firing at us.
Wow.
And we had AK-AK exploding, around the plane, but nothing hit us, thank God. So, and some of the WAC nurses that were on the plane supposedly to take care of us, and they were pretty hysterical about it. And my mother was calming them down and saying, "Nothing to worry about. We're going to be fine." And so we were. Got to Leyte, and it was like being in a wonderful world, you know. We were treated royally. We had quarters. Women were in one place, men in another. And then we had wonderful food and movies on the beach every night, and we could take rides out with the LSTs in Leyte Bay, and it was a great time. I hated to leave.
Oh, did your father get to fly out with you?
Excuse me?
Did your father fly out with you?
Yes.
Okay.
In order to leave, that's one reason it took us a month before we could leave Santo Tomas. He had to be able to climb up on the plane.
Okay.
And in those days, that's what you did, I guess.
Yeah.
And we could all do it. And by the time he was able to do that is when we left. But
okay.
We were still a second plane to leave. And then we spent about a month on Leyte Island, just recuperating mostly.
Yeah.
And then we had all sorts of physicals and dental exams. Our teeth were perfect.
Great.
And my mother told him it was because we hadn't had candy for a long time.
Right.
And maybe that was it. I don't know. But we were there, and then we were boarded a ship. It's a Navy ship run by, I don't know. Anyway, you'll have to excuse my memory.
You're doing great. You're just doing great.
Anyway, we took the long way around to San Francisco. Of course, the war was still raging.
Right.
And we were concerned about submarines, you know, on the way.
Yep.
But that didn't happen. And we got to San Francisco, and my mother's brother and his wife were there to meet us, and we went right away to my mother's favorite hotel in San Francisco. And then had to do some shopping because we needed shoes and everything else.
Do you remember what month and year that was that you arrived at San Francisco?
Let me think for a minute. I should. I think it was about the middle, maybe. It was just before Roosevelt passed away. We got there before Roosevelt passed away.
Okay.
But we were there in San Francisco when he did pass away. And I remember hysterical people were all over the place.
Oh, my. Okay.
And we were there for a while, and then about a week, maybe not that long. And then we went down to see, my mother's father was still alive. And so we went down to Southern California to see him, and he was delighted to see us back healthy.
Gosh, I bet.
I've never been to the States before.
Okay.
And then my aunt and uncle had some property in Flagstaff. And had horses, and it was it's a beautiful place, Flagstaff, you know, especially in the summer.
This was your mother's brother?
My mother's sister and her husband.
Okay.
And they had a guest house behind their house. And so they invited us to come and recuperate there, and then decide what the next step was going to be.
What were their names?
Hmm?
What were their names, your aunt and uncle?
I'm sorry, I'm not having...
Your aunt and uncle, what were their names?
Hepners. And he was head of Santa Fe for Northern Arizona.
H-E-P-N-E-R?
H-O-E-P-T-N-E-R. Bert Hepner.
Bert.
Herbert.
Hepner. Okay.
So we stayed in this guest house, and then my dad's company had their main headquarters in New York, and he was very anxious to get there and get going again with, you know, starting the business going again.
Okay.
So he had to leave, and then my brother and George went on the train back there too, and my sister went down to the University of Arizona, and I stayed in Flagstaff to finish high school. And I lived with my aunt and uncle for those 2 years. And they were wonderful to me. And like I say, I had horses, and we could ride on weekends and rode up to the peaks and rode down Mount Eldon, you know, a few times and other places as well.
So back me up just a little bit, Marcia. So you got to San Francisco, Roosevelt died, you went down to see your grandfather. It was your first time to the States.
Yes.
And I'm assuming you must have taken the train to Flagstaff.
Yes.
And the was this 1943?
1945. See, we were 3 years in Santo Tomas.
Okay.
And Pearl Harbor was 1941. We were interned in January 1942. And then 3 years later, 1945, we were liberated.
Okay, and the war ended that summer, that fall, 45.
Well, that summer was wonderful because, except that I had to take a class in American history in order to qualify as a senior.
Oh.
At Flagstaff High School, and that's the thing I didn't like doing.
I bet.
I did it.
Can you tell me about your uncle, Uncle Bert?
Yeah.
About his, was he working for the Santa Fe Railroad?
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that train ride coming over? Was that a steam train still, or had it gone to diesel?
Was it a what?
A steam train, or had it gone to diesel? In
went on the train, yes.
Yeah, in 45. Okay. What were your thoughts of seeing the desert after growing up in the Philippines?
Well, I thought it needed a lot of rain, which it does right now.
Oh, my gosh. It sure does. That must have been quite a change.
Yeah, it was. And I'll have to tell you, I turned 17 on the 4th of May, just after we got there to Flagstaff. And my dad said, you're going to start school Monday. And I said, that's not fair. We've been through all this. And he said, no, we need to start school. So I went, and it was just at the end of the school year. So it was all so new to me. And I was wandering around at school a little bit. It was just a one-story school, high school.
And this was Flagstaff High?
Yeah.
And it was kind of halfway up a little hill, trying to remember where it was. Let's see now, there's Humphreys, and it would have been just a block west of Humphreys?
I think so. I'm not positive where it was.
Okay, and it was
It was the only high school in Flagstaff at that time.
Right, and it was just a couple blocks from downtown.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a good point, because it was also brand new to me, and people were very nice, I'll have to say. This Flagstaff High School was just great.
Nice.
And professors and other kids. And I went to see them decorating this auditorium. And I couldn't figure out what on earth was going on. So a young man came up to me and he said, would you like to go to the prom with me?
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, what's a prom? And he said, can you dance? And I said, yes. Well, that's all you need to know. And I know where you're staying. You're staying with the Hepners, so I'll pick you up there. Well, I didn't have anything to wear. It was wartime. But ladies in town heard about me, and so they brought formals out for me to try on.
Wow.
And I was still pretty skinny then, but I did find one that had a sash that I could wear. And sure enough, went to the formal dance.
Nice. And who invited you? Do you remember?
Young man. I can't think of his name. Very nice young man.
Okay. All right.
That's about all I can think of.
So,
people in Flagstaff in general, and certainly my aunt and uncle's friends and so forth, and the church there, Episcopal Church there, they were very nice to us.
Nice. Pine trees, that's a whole nother new thing as well. And the smell of lumber coming from the lumber mill and the sound of the trains taking off to the west up the hill, chunk, 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 chunk. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Gosh.
Anyway, it was just the end of the school year.
Okay.
So I finished up a junior year, and then I had to take this one class, summer school class, by mail, and I belligerently did that. So I started up again as a senior, but that summer in Flagstaff was just so wonderful because it was so cool and beautiful, and we just thought the whole area was just marvelous, you know, Grand Canyon. Made a trip up there right away and saw the Grand Canyon. And
wow.
Just totally impressed.
So your Uncle Bert, did he work for the Santa Fe Railroad?
Yes.
And what was his position again?
I think he was like head of Northern Arizona into Bakersfield. I think he'd have to travel during the week on the train to check on these different stations.
Okay.
And he went to Gallup and he went to Bakersfield, and the rest of it was around Arizona. And he was out of town mostly during the week. He'd get back for weekends.
So he was sort of a line engineer, if I get that right. So he's he's not driving the train, but he's overseeing operations.
I guess.
Okay. Sort of troubleshooting with the station masters and. Okay.
Yeah. So I went to school, flight staff, and had a good time. And
what was your first impression of the Grand Canyon? This is the summer of 1945.
Yeah. Well, it was wonderful. But then when the war ended, and we were also excited that we decided we'd go into town, because my aunt and uncle lived out of town a ways.
Okay.
And so we went into town to see about the celebration, and there wasn't one.
Wow. Huh.
And so that was kind of disappointing, because we were so excited about it, you know.
Yeah.
It was over.
Yeah,
gosh. The town had surrendered, and so on and so forth.
Huh. Back up a bit. Do you remember sort of which way out of town your aunt and uncle were staying? Were they on the road toward the Grand Canyon, or were they okay up near the Museum of Northern Arizona?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because your son John shared with me a wonderful photo of a couple of cows standing in a pretty open meadow, with the San Francisco peaks behind them.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to think, well, that's full of houses now.
Yes.
Where was that picture taken?
And that's where we used to ride. We'd ride up to Shoals Canyon a lot.
Okay.
And then I remember a trip going up to Humphreys Peak on horseback and freezing nearly to death. It was so cold.
Wow, I bet. The Doyle Saddle Road would have been open then. I think up the, and the pipeline would have been in place going up to the Inner Basin. Seems like there would have been a lot of wonderful riding areas to go.
Yes. Oh, there was, and I guess there still is, I hope.
Okay, yeah. It's
developed a lot out there, too.
Well, it has everywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, it sounds like you sort of went from hell to heaven.
Right. You can kind of say that, but my mother and dad and brother were in New York, and my sister was down at the U of A, and I missed them.
Oh.
And also but my aunt and uncle were wonderful to me, wonderful.
Nice.
And they had two horses and then got a third, so the three of us could ride together on weekends.
Nice.
And nice. They were just very nice to me.
So for your senior year, something new would have happened to you in the form of precipitation falling from the sky, frozen.
Well, I could hardly wait for snow. I'll tell you, I was so excited.
Really?
And as soon as it fell, my aunt took my brother and I, and he was still there in Flagstaff, and we went up to make snow angels in the snow.
Uh-huh.
And I was so excited to see the snow. But I got used to it, and it got awfully cold in Flagstaff.
Yes. Yep.
Which I was not used to.
Wow. Yeah. How did you handle that first winter? Did you spend a lot of time by the stove?
I did. And, of course, I had a nice warm coat and boots and so forth and mittens. But it was still. And then in Flagstaff in those days, they didn't have a school lunch program. And what the kids did was they would leave high school and go down into the city or village, whatever. And there was a bakery. And they sold lunches in the bakery.
Oh.
And my aunt sometimes made my lunch for me. And otherwise, then I would go down into this bakery and have lunch. And then go back up in time for school.
And it was like snowy out there and cold.
Yes, it was.
Huh. Dear. Nice. What else do you remember about Flagstaff in 1945-46?
Oh, it was just magical, really. And people were very, very nice to us, to me, and I'm sure the rest of the family. My sister was down in Tucson that year, most of the year, and my brother had gone back to, he'd gone with my parents to New York.
What part of high school, what part of school did you like the best?
Well, I enjoyed the history class because I felt part of it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I knew some Spanish, having grown up and spent time in the Philippines.
Okay.
In fact, I think I started at the American school in kindergarten, and one of the did like a bilingual education then.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was very ahead of its time.
Great. Mm-hmm. All right.
I've lost a lot of it, but I still get by a little bit. And I have learned to speak a little Tagalog, too, so.
Okay.
People here that are from workers here who are Filipinos.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I can shock them every time I say something in Tagalog to them.
Oh, cool. Oh,
and that's then fun. As well as the ones in Spanish, you know, from Mexico.
Yeah, nice. And were you thinking of going to college then after high school?
And then right out of high school, I went to NAU.
Okay.
But it was the North, it wasn't called NAU, it was called...
Arizona Teachers College?
Yeah, Arizona State Teachers College.
Okay.
And I didn't want to be a teacher at the time. And I took a business course, and I didn't like that. And so finally I got into education, and that seemed to suit me very well. And that's where I met my husband.
Okay. So this is the summer of 1946?
Right.
All right. Did you go to summer school then to start?
No, I didn't. After the first summer, I didn't go to summer school.
Okay. All right.
So eventually I had my bachelor's degree and had married my husband, and then we... move to the Grand Canyon.
Okay, well, I tell you what. We've been yik-yakking for about an hour, and you've gotten me to the summer of 1946. Maybe this is a good place to...
Stop
for part one of this interview, and we'll pick it up again in the summer of 1946. How does that sound?
That sounds fine.
Okay. Well, with that, this will conclude what is... now part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Marcia Clark. Today is Monday, October 12, 2020. My name is Tom Martin. And Marcia, thank you so very much.